We've been telling you guys about it, and the guys from Scratch did not disappoint. The Ask Ernish episode of Season 2 of Adventures of Golf is here. I just watched it on Twitter, and it is fantastic. It is a spiritual experience. They travel out to a remote island west of Scotland and rediscover an old Tom Morris course that was once lost. Swing by the Scratch Twitter page and check it out for yourself.
Be the right club.
Be the right club today.
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, welcome back to part two of our interview with Rory McIlroy. Hopefully you guys enjoyed part one. Part two is a bit longer. It's a bit more free-flowing and a lot more random questions. So I hope you enjoy the stories, and thanks a ton for tuning in.
What's something that you would ask in general about golf media? Like, what's something you'd say, why do you guys do this? Or why is this a reality? Or why is this what you guys say? It can be towards us, or it could be towards golf media in general. It could be anything.
I would say, why I feel like golf media try to make rivalries for a start. You know, they always try to bring the previous era back into the conversation.
I think
not
one
you
of my
guys.
Favorite quotes of yours was, you know, I think two or three or four eras have passed kind of since my last era.
Yeah, exactly. It's the eras thing, and the constantly comparing achievements of this generation with generations in the past, because it's a completely different game. You know, JT shoots 63 at Erin Hills, and all of a sudden they're, let's go to Johnny in the booth, or you know, he wasn't at the booth, I guess it's Fox, but they're always bringing these players back. And look, golf is such a nostalgic game, and every person that grew up with golf will think that generation is the best, because you know there's no skill involved in golf anymore. It's just bomb your driver and blah blah blah, and that's the thing that I would, and that I don't think that's just golf media. I think that's just golf fans in general. Yeah, it's just and trying to compare, okay, who was better, like Tiger or Jack or whatever. You know, it's just, you can't compare them.
Right.
You just can't.
Everything changes.
Yeah.
So not trying to lob up golf media to get punched on, so what, and not take it ourselves. What are we wrong about? Like, what are things that we say and do at No Laying Up that we're just off on? You can be hard on us. We'll take it. You're off Twitter now, so you don't even see what we do anymore.
I don't see much. No, I mean, I love this new wave of golf media. I've said that from day one. I think it's a massive tool in bringing a new audience to the game that wouldn't have watched it before, and actually you make it fun and interesting, and you know, it's what the younger generation want to see. I think sometimes they don't understand I think you do now because you alluded to it earlier, but don't understand the obligation, the corporate obligations and stuff like that players have to, you know, abide by and go through and stuff, because as I said, it is a business, and it's, you know, you're sort of restricted in stuff you can do, what you can say. I mean, we went through it like earlier this year with a couple of things, and
yeah,
it's just
things, you know, I would have never thought,
yeah,
of.
Yeah, exactly. And neither would I. Yeah. But then, you know, you get an email, it's like, okay, maybe we shouldn't have done that or said that, or but yeah, you know, you would never realize.
Yeah, it wasn't until, yeah, I won't rehash it.
No, we don't need to. But
it's
just
funny, like it's comments that get made, you know, when we're just having a free flowing conversation over the course of an hour that you would never think that would have a reaction to,
yeah,
it, but
exactly,
you know, someone has a stake in this being said, and it, yeah, kind of can snowball on you. So,
yeah.
Who is somebody that we, like, either No Laying Up or whatever, gives too much of a hard time to that you actually kind of like?
Oh, Kutcher, you like Kutcher though, do you?
Yeah, I mean,
is it Kutcher's Tron that gets easy, on? Is it Tron that gets Kutcher's on Kutcher?
Easy to make fun
he
of.
He has a very waffling stance of Kutcher.
But I mean, he's just kind of easy to make fun of. Nobody dislikes Kutcher.
Okay, okay.
I mean,
Kutch is the man.
Yeah.
We've been alluding to this a lot on Twitter and stuff, but I'm sure you can validate for us that Kutcher's the low-key funniest guy.
He doesn't
there.
Have a filter. It's like what it comes into his brain.
We
like,
saw it at the Pro-Am party on Monday.
Really?
He had a little Grey Goose floating in the tank.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
There were some jokes made.
There's a couple that I know of that, yeah. I cannot say them on here.
There's different levels of like dislike. There's a couple guys I put in like I can't stand this guy in any capacity. There's a bucket of guys that are just kind of I don't want to say fun to make fun of, but
yeah,
like
but
fun
just,
to tease about
yeah,
and
of
make
course.
Jokes. And
I think the ones that you genuinely dislike are there's merit to that.
Okay, I thought you were gonna like throw us pulled. You'd be like. Poulter.
Well, okay, yeah, Paul. Yeah. I love Paul. I can see how Paul's can rub people up the wrong way.
Okay,
but so I have a foot on both camps, I guess.
Yeah.
But I can see that. But and I was of the same thought process as you were until I got out on tour and I actually started to spend time with him, getting Ryder Cup teams with him. The guy's an absolute legend. He is solid. He's a family man. Obviously, loves his cars. Likes to show it off. He's been successful going from. You know, being an assistant club pro at however old he was at Leighton Buzzard in England, to being an all-star in the Ryder Cup and making this life for himself, he should be proud of himself.
Yeah.
And if he wants to show off his cars to the world, great. So
His own way. I think the few times I've been around him, I think it was this like in Scotland at the Pro-Am party or whatever.
Yeah.
Like I was around him and he was hilarious.
Yeah,
like,
he's brilliant.
Was laughing and I was like. This is not what you shine through on social media. Like you're getting in your own way.
We talk about this all the time. You know, social media helps so many people more than it should, and it really hurts so many people more than it should.
Some people don't necessarily know how to do it, and you quit. Don't put your arms out. You quit.
Me?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, I wasn't talking about
that.
No, I'm talking about like other guys.
I mean, there are guys who have no personality who just happen to, you know, get it right on Twitter,
exactly.
And everybody thinks they're the funniest guy ever. And Poulter might be the epitome of that because, you know, I've had great experiences with him. I've had bad experiences with him, but by and large, he's pretty good.
I don't have a bad thing to say about Poulter.
It's just
a legend
on Twitter, you know.
So yeah, I guess Poulter would be the one, but I can totally see why. You can rub people up the wrong way.
But there's also, it's kind of funny to me how there's guys will give a hard time that, you know, can take it and like it and appreciate it. Like, we've made jokes about you in the past,
of course,
the time.
I mean, if you can't laugh at yourself, that's the
thing.
Some
people can't. A lot of people can't. And so, sometimes we are kind of on tiptoes as we walk around. Just, you know, I have no idea what so-and-so thinks me because I made this joke online or whatever. But some people take it really well.
I think the epitome of this might be someone like Zach Johnson, who, you know, I'm sure you can attest also is, you know, he's like the nicest guy in the world. But we're called no laying up.
Yeah, like we're going to make fun of you for laying up. Like, you literally won the Masters by laying up. I don't dislike you. He blocked us on Twitter, and I've never tweeted at him once. I have no idea why, but that's when, some people don't take the jokes very well, which is what it is, I guess. But what do you miss most about a previous time of your life that's no longer the reality now, but just something that you're like, you know what, I miss doing that, or I miss this?
I mean, being like 18, 19, 20 again, just going out like getting hammered with your mates and not worrying about like a photo appearing on social media or like stuff like that. And even there's some stuff, like I think there's a photo out there of me like chugging Jägermeister out of the bottle. And like,
you just sent a bunch of people Googling that photo.
Yeah,
right?
No,
that
exactly.
That was your own doing.
So
I'm one of them.
Yeah, exactly. So like, even though that's out there, you know, just go back to a time when, you know, people didn't just, you know, take a photo of you or weren't, you know, just stuff like that. I mean, the amount of like fun times that we had, 18, 19, 20, you're on tour, you know, you've just started to make some money. You can go and like do whatever basically, and not really have a worry in the world about being photoed or being in the paper the next day or
All right, so that's a feeling that almost no one will ever get to experience or maybe have to experience. What's it like when you go to dinner or a party or, you know, is that in the back of your mind like the whole time you're
out? I would say my peripheral vision is better than most. I sort of notice a lot of things just happening and I'm very good at pretending like I don't see someone that's recognized me because I'm very good at it because I
it's kind of once you make eye contact.
Yeah, but. I guess not that I don't acknowledge them, but if I stop and say hello and whatever, it takes me just that much longer to get to my table or eat my dinner or whatever it may be. So that's it. You sort of, it's sort of like a guard, but it's
people are
trying to live your life as if you would if no one knew who you were.
Yeah.
That's sort of what you try to do.
And people are so much less subtle than they think they're being.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much true.
I mean,
yeah. There's a really nice way to do it.
Yeah.
And then there's the people that just do or get a bit intrusive and whatever. But there's a, you know, I had this kid come up to me. We were in a sushi place last night and you could tell he was really nervous. And so I'd followed you on the course today. I'm really sorry to interrupt. I saw that you've just ordered. I didn't want to interrupt your dinner. And, you know, I'd just love to have a photo. And I say, yeah, of course. Like, yeah. You know, it's totally fine. So that's that. But then the people that are there and they sort of appear over your shoulder trying to take a selfie.
Yeah.
It's like, no, please don't do that.
There's got to be a difference between the people that treat you like a human and the people that treat you like a famous person.
Yeah.
And that's probably it right there. Like you said, just you're just an object of my picture right now. Let's take this versus you're a human. You just ordered dinner. Do you mind if you take 2 seconds out of it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's just, right, and there's that. It's still trying to come to the same, it's still trying to get the same result,
right.
But there's two different ways to go about it.
You meet so many people, I'm sure, day to day that there's got to be one really kind of weird interaction that sticks out to you.
Like an awkward fan interaction you've ever had.
You know, so we did this thing. I'll say this because you're going to maybe cover the Asia swing of the, you know.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. I haven't announced that yet.
So, but anyways, you're going to go to Asia. Yeah. You're going to do a little Asian adventure.
So that's what it's like when someone breaks your news.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry. You can edit that out. It's fine. So it was myself, Ian Poulter, Lee Westwood, Liang Wenchong. Was that? It was just the four of us? Might have been just the four of us. And we did a thing in 2011 called the China Challenge. We did 7 cities in 7 days in China. And we landed at some city. We went to the golf course and we sat down to have some lunch. There might have been like 6 or 7 of us at a round table. But literally, like, there was a ring of security guards around our table and like people everywhere trying to like get underneath their arms, jump over them, like just trying to get something signed. And it was the most surreal thing I have ever been a part of in my life. It's like these guys, you know, it was literally like an animal in the zoo or, you know, something. It was just like, this is crazy. Absolutely crazy. So you got that to look forward to when you go over there.
I don't think that's going to happen to me.
But yeah, I mean, one-on-ones and stuff, not really anything.
How much cash do you carry on you?
None. Like literally none. I spent the last $20 in my wallet on a Starbucks for you guys. So. You're welcome.
What a guess.
We could Venmo you for that, you know.
Yeah, we could pay you back. When you go out to dinner, do people just, like if you're with a group, do people just assume that you're going to pick up the check? Is there a dance that goes with that? I'll get it.
You know, not with my friends and stuff, no, because they'll always offer and always, which is great. There's
at
some
least
other,
fake it, yeah.
Well, not fake, nah, it, no, but kidding. No, they'll definitely grab. But I look, if we're at a nice restaurant and we've had a nice bottle of wine, I'm not expecting them to pick up the tab for whatever it's going to be. But if we're going to somewhere that's like a little more, say the bill comes to $100 or whatever, you know, like they'll more than happy to. So it's not, but yeah, look, there's some people that maybe. I don't. It's always a weird one, but I'll always offer to pay. It's not like I'll be the first one to put my credit card on the table and just sort of take care of it.
If you were to create like a 6 to 8 week tour through the British Isles, let's say there's tournaments that go through the British Isles, what courses would you put in the Rota?
Are we including
Let's just, I mean, let's just say you can just
Ireland,
make,
Scotland,
yeah,
Northern
all the
Ireland.
British Isles.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I would start at, I wouldn't start at St. Andrews. I'd probably finish at St. Andrews. It's probably the most, you know, it's a nice way to bring the trip to a climax. I think that in the British Isles, the further south you go, the worse the courses get.
Okay.
Maybe some of the parkland courses around London and stuff are really nice, but you go anywhere south of that, it's not very good. So, I mean, you've played more than I have. I haven't played a lot of the really good courses. I just play where the tournaments are. But
I don't think there's many I've played that you haven't played.
So I'll, like, obviously all of the open road at Troon, Turnberry, Muirfield. I think I haven't played Turnberry since it's been but it's supposed to be
awesome.
Legit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, for a lot of Trump's, you know, shortfalls, he's pretty good at getting a golf course the way it should be.
You brought him up.
So
on that topic.
Hey, he does golf courses as well. What can I say? But anyway, so Turnberry, Troon, Muirfield, St. Andrews, Birkdale. Birkdale's sneaky good.
Oh,
like
that's awesome.
I loved it this year at the Open. I just thought it played really good. It's so fair. I've never seen links fairways as flat, so that's why it makes it so fair. It's like you hit something in the middle of the fairway, it's going to stay there. It's not going to run off into a pop bunker or go into the rough, or, you know. So I love that.
I love courses that, from a professional standpoint, that make you guys think off the tee.
Yeah.
And Birkdale is an exercise of the brain.
I love golf courses that give you a choice.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it doesn't dictate to you the way you should play it. It's like, okay, you can lay up short of this bunker, or you can go past this bunker. You know, there's, you know, you can bring two bunkers into play to one bunker into play. You can, you know, there's so many different ways to play that golf course. I loved it this year. I thought it was a great test. Decent winner as well.
The idea of kind of, you know, thinking your way around the golf course is interesting to me, because someone like you, you know, if there's a course where you can hit 18 drivers, that's obviously to your advantage because of how you drive the ball. But, you know, at the same time, you say, like, kind of thinking your way around. I'm just curious, you know, how do you kind of square those two things personally?
Yeah, I just, I don't like a golf course that just makes everyone hit it in the same spot every single time.
Yeah.
You know, like, so, you know, yeah, that's exactly where you hit it and then you hit it. You know, I like golf courses where you can be a little bit creative and create your own game plan instead of the game plan sort of just being
forced
there.
On you.
Yeah, forced on you, I guess. That's been my big thing. It feels like you're in handcuffs. You can't really let your, you know, creativeness or, you know, imagination really take over if you want to take something on, or, you know. So
what are some courses that do that really well in your mind?
That give you choice?
Yeah.
Let me see.
I have to do some thinking on the PGA Tour ones. Cause,
well, that's kind of why I was asking.
Yeah,
I mean, but
that.
It's funny. You know, we go to golf courses. They're not necessarily the best in the world, but they can host an event.
Yeah.
You know, they're big properties with a lot of space to put hospitality and
great
all
condition.
That. Yeah, exactly. You know, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, like somewhere like say a TPC Sawgrass. It sort of, you know. You know, it sort of doesn't play into anyone's hands. It's, you know, you could be a bomber, you could be a short hitter, you could be whatever. And I didn't like that at the start because I felt like it sort of handcuffed me a bit and I couldn't take it on as much. But you learn to love it. You learn to love that it sort of, you know, it makes you play certain ways and certain shots. And so I've learned to like Sawgrass. I hated Sawgrass at the start, but I've learned to appreciate what it is.
It's kind of like Phil, just you saying that reminds me of Phil's relationship with the Open Championship.
Yeah.
In the early 2000s, he would have told you, like, I could never win this championship or this championship's not for me. That's the kind of the purpose of that question was just, we wanted to know if you're able to differentiate, or, you know, do you differentiate between, I love this golf course because it's great for me, and
I love
this golf course because of
what
it is.
It's a great golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I appreciate great golf course architecture, and I appreciate that I look somewhere like in Erin Hills this year should have been great for me because I could hit driver everywhere, but it wasn't. You know, I've won on golf courses that I can hit driver at. I've won on golf courses where, you know, it's
right.
Not, you know, there's one of the golf courses that I loved this year that I'd never played before was River Highlands, TPC River Highlands. Great little golf course, not too long. Mm-hmm. Makes you think a little bit. Like, I loved it. I will probably go back there next year because I like the golf course so much, and you know, it was a great tournament and whatever, but it makes you, you know, you don't hit driver everywhere, but you don't need to, but greens are small and you know, you have to sort of place your ball off the tee in certain spots, and it does make you think a little bit.
The epic year for Callaway Golf continues, and that's right, they did not fire us after part one of this Rory McIlroy interview. Callaway staffer Mark Leishman's wire-to-wire win of the BMW Championship was his second of the year and a very popular win amongst PGA Tour circles. I know anyone that's ever come in contact with that guy has nothing but the best things to say about him. But not only is it his second win of the year, it's his second win with the Epic driver, the Chrome Soft X ball, and an Odyssey putter. And that win puts Odyssey over 60 wins worldwide this year. That's 18 clear of their nearest competitor. There's a lot more details on the Callaway gear in Mark's winning bag. Visit CallawayGolf.com today for more details. Now back to Roy McIlroy.
What would you try to emulate if you were to design a golf course?
Oh,
I forget if I asked a similar question on the previous one.
I would definitely, you know, I guess if you look at all golf course designers, especially the players that have, they put a premium on what they were good at. Yes, you know, you look at a Jack Nicklaus course and you can tell straight away that it's a Nicklaus course. Or
so yours is going to be the 10,000 yard all driver course.
Yeah, bombs away. No, a mixture of holes, holes where you have to shape it left to right, right to left, greens that angle one way, greens that angle another. But then also, you know, that you can run shots up onto the green, you don't have to fly it all the way. Not that like that's obviously I would like to fly it all the way, but just to give people different options and different looks, and I wouldn't want to create a one-dimensional golf course. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the thing, that just options and choices and different styles of player being able to still get to the same point where they can play it and make birdies and shoot a good score doesn't alienate a certain type of player.
Are you interested in getting into golf course design at some point?
Yes. I would need someone to mentor me a little bit, because I don't know the first thing about golf course design. I know what I like and I know what I don't like, but trying to put that into a drawing and then digging it out and all that stuff, like I wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah.
Jack Nicklaus and I have talked about it. He said he was with Pete Dye whenever he started golf course design, and he sort of held his hand through the process. And, you know, Jack and I had talked about maybe that being us at some point, or maybe someone else. We've sort of, Dana Fry, who was one of the designers at Erin Hills, we've been sort of just chatting and said, would you ever be interested? And Dana said, like, I could help you along and maybe get to a point where, you know, maybe one day we do something together, or I don't know, but that's a long way down the line. You know, I need to concentrate on playing golf courses first, and then I'll think about building them.
Are there golf courses that still really get you excited? I mean, you have access to any golf course in the world, and you play this professionally, you see world-class courses almost every week, but is there ever a time where you're like, oh man, I need to go see that place, or I really want to play that place, or over the course, have you checked them all off in your mind, or do you lose that kind of luster of exploring a new course?
Yeah, I've probably lost a little bit of that.
That's fair.
But there's courses that I haven't played that I'd love to. Cyprus.
Okay.
Never played Cyprus.
Can't get an invite?
I know a few people. I'm never really over on the West Coast. So,
right.
Cyprus would be one. And there's actually a few on that in that area. I've never played Spyglass, but I'm going to play the AT&T, the Pro-Am next year with my dad. So we're going to get a chance to go over.
That event's had such a cool resurgence over the last couple of years with like Jordan and Jason, and now, you know, obviously yourself going over there, and it's so cool.
I'm playing like 30 events next year. I'm loving it. I'm all in.
That's
I'm playing everywhere.
That event's so cool to attend. It's not always well represented on TV.
Yeah.
But it's so different when you go to it in person. Like, it's just so cool.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. And then I'm trying to think. There's some, like, I've played Pine Valley. That was one that I wanted to, and that was really cool. There's some out east in Long Island I'd love to go play that I haven't. I mean, I've played Shinnecock, which is top three in the world for me. It is just awesome. I can't wait for the U.S. Open next year. And considering my views on the U.S. Open the last few years, that's a big statement. Yeah, Shinnecock's going to be awesome next year. I mean, I played it a couple of summers ago, and I just thought it's perfect. They don't need to do anything with it. They don't need to trick it up. They don't need to. It's just play it the way it is. You'll get a decent winning score. People will love it. So that I'm excited. Friar's Head. I want to go play Friar's Head, I think. So I'm going to take a little trip up to the Hamptons the week before the U.S. Open next year and maybe go and play Friars and Maidstone and some of those places that I've never been able to get out there and play.
If you need need a fourth for Wolfhammer, just let us know.
I don't carry that much money.
We take Venmo. That's fine. Okay. I think you'd be collecting anyways. But I do want to ask kind of about your recreational rounds. Do you prefer to play golf? When you do play golf, who do you play with? Do you play one ball all the way through the hole? Do you guys play betting games? Are you hit balls in the range? What's kind of your home game look like?
I you'd find me more on the range on weeks off rather than on the course. I'd maybe play twice or three times a week. And when I do play, I like to go, you know, my dad's a member at Seminole and he loves it over there. And I love it over there because it's just such a cool place. So I would go over and play with him and a couple of his buddies, you know, from time to time. And sometimes it's nice, you know, I'm at the Bears Club so much and see all the guys. Sometimes it's nice to get out of that routine and do something else. But if we're playing and I actually won a game, I'll call JT up or Ricky or DJ or Keegan Bradley, whoever it is that's a member of the Bears, Luke Donald. You know, there's so many guys down there. And we can get a four together and play. And it's competitive and it makes you concentrate because if I'm just going and playing around to golf, I'm sort of just, it's wishy-washy. Right. It's not, you know, but if you can get four guys together that are of that caliber, it makes you concentrate and your pride comes into it and your ego a little bit. You don't want to be beaten, you know, so... So we do that a good bit down there and it's good fun. I'm not one of these guys that needs to play for a lot of money. If it means that I just am able to beat JT or beat whoever, then I'm happy with that. But if guys want to play for money, I'm fine doing that too.
Have you ever played for an uncomfortable amount of money?
Never.
No?
Never.
Is that because there's not an uncomfortable amount?
No, there is. There certainly is. I've never played for... I mean, I've never played for anything over four figures.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, it's, yeah. You know, it.
Right. I mean, you're coming down the final stretch of the Tour Championship last year. You're essentially playing for like $7 million,
yeah,
the difference
exactly,
in first place to second.
Yeah,
so that's why I was wondering if there was an uncomfortable amount.
But. Yeah, not, I mean, because at the end of the day, I just wanted to win the FedEx Cup. I didn't want to win, or the Tour Championship. I didn't, you know, I wasn't thinking that, geez, you know.
We recently heard a story about Phil that involved Michael Jordan and a duffel bag of cash, which is why I was wondering.
Yeah, no, I've never, you know, obviously Jordan's down in the Bears and whatever, but I've never gotten into that.
No,
we work hard enough for our money, and if you're sort of throwing it away on stupid games like that, I'm not, you know, I've no problem going to a casino and playing blackjack all night, and
right.
Geez, if you win a little bit great. If you lose, at least you have fun doing it, but there's no fun losing a golf match.
I think we're well into making this a two-parter, but we have some, we have some grab bag questions if you're still up for it. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Be careful. This is back to what you're saying about not being able to say no. So
it's all good.
How often do you change out shoes? Like how long will you wear one pair of shoes?
So there's some weeks I'm scripted in a certain sort of style of shoe or color of shoe that I just know that I'll not wear again. So it could be one round of golf I'll wear them, or like if it's just a plain white or plain black, This pair that I have with me this week, I've probably worn, I think they were new at Northern Trust, so I wore them through Northern Trust 2 days in Boston and then here. So so I could go through the playoffs and wear those, and I guess it's, you know, Nike will be coming out with a new version very soon anyway, so all those will be sort of redundant, and I'll get a new pair. But probably every 4 weeks, I'll change them out.
Do you ever get blisters like from wearing it, breaking in a new pair of shoes all the time?
Never.
Or, no.
Never. Yeah. No. I'm happy. I'm not actually. Yeah, but they designed a certain mold and a certain last so that like it's a perfect fit. You know, I'm lucky that way, I guess.
Do you ever wear the same clothes twice?
All the time. Yeah, all the time.
So stuff goes in the wash and gets reworn. And you're not wearing brand new shirts.
No, not at all. Sometimes they like to, you know, obviously I'm scripted and stuff for majors, so I might wear those once and then sign them, and they might go to charity or whatever. But I definitely recycle all my stuff. All right, I wear it, and they send so much. They do like Nike do like 3 or 4 drops a year, and it's always way too much. So I'm always giving stuff away. I'd rather just give the new stuff away and not wear another one of the same shirt, and just give it to my buddies or give it to charity or whatever. So
that was the next question. Do you do your own ironing?
I do not. I don't do my own ironing. I have attempted to at some points, but no, I couldn't stand there and iron. I mean, if a pair of pants are in the suitcase and they're like really creased, I'll attempt it, but it's not very good. I just like usually press the button on the top, like the steamer thing, and just sort of give it a couple of little swipes, and that's about it.
What's the biggest fashion regret of your career?
Ooh, there's been a couple of suspect belt buckles, and then probably the hair more than anything else. Like, I don't know if that's a fashion statement or, but the hair was like, it got out of control at one point. I mean, I look back, I'm like, wow, that was really bad.
I think everyone kind of goes through that phase at some point. Yeah. Yours just happened to be in public.
At the time, did you think it was really good?
Yeah, I look good. Yeah,
everyone's been through
big
this
afro.
Phase.
This is really cool.
Looked very similar. I had the same.
I went did the same thing in college. My dad was like, "I know, I've been there," because my dad had a bad haircut in college too. And he's like, "My dad said to me, when you get to my age, you're gonna realize how stupid you look." He said the same to me. Told me the story. I was like, "No, you don't understand how the afro is in."
I look back at not the stuff that I've worn on the course, but off the course, like the baggy denim jeans and like Timberland boots, and like you're like, oh, what are you doing? Terrible. But yeah, my fashion sense has definitely improved over the years.
What's the worst like pro am faux pas somebody can make, like an amateur can make?
Hitting the pro with their golf ball.
Has that happened?
Yeah, I've been hit before.
That was a quick answer.
Twice actually, one with a sculled bunker shot, and one, you know, usually in pro ams, you know, amateurs, they their miss is right usually, so you'd always try, and if you're obviously you're further ahead in the fairway, so you always stand to the left hand side and you think you're safe there. And this guy in Abu Dhabi a couple of years ago, like he top heeled it and it almost went over his left toe, and it sort of trundled up like 2 bounces and hit me on the side of the knee. I was like, that was I don't know where to stand from. I think the only place is to stand behind someone, I guess, and be safe. But so yeah, a couple of times.
What's the worst pro-am experience you've had? Getting hit with a golf ball.
Yeah, probably getting hit with a golf ball is up there. I think, you know, just playing with guys that take it way too serious, and just, you know, they're there to have fun and they expend so much mental energy that they're done after 12 holes. And then it's like the last 6 there, they're not enjoying it. You're not enjoying it. You're like, you may as well just go into the clubhouse and have a beer or something. You know, it's sort of, I've actually said that to the tours. I've been like, why don't you make pro-ams like 9 holes? Because people get what they want. They get,
right.
They play and it's great, but make us go in and have lunch with them, or have, you know, because we're not obligated to do that. We play our 18 holes. We say goodbye. And, you know, but if I think the amateurs would actually get more out of sitting around a table and having some lunch and some conversation and, you know, talking about stuff and telling stories. And I think the pro would get more out of it. And I think the Ams would get more out of it as well.
Is there ever a time where you enter like a certain level of fame where you stop getting nervous or anxious meeting other famous people?
No. If I met a couple of people,
who
right
gets
now,
you stuck, or who have you recently met that you're kind of starstruck or kind of?
It's. I mean, for me, it's sports stars, I guess. So like even, you know, a couple of years ago, and I would meet like, I'm trying to think whether it was like Roger Federer or Rafael Nadal in the tennis world, or like even some soccer players that I'd never met before. You're just sort of, it's not that you're nervous, but you're just like, you know, you grew up admiring these guys, and it's, you know, it's just such a cool thing to meet them and to sort of, yeah.
You sneak up over their shoulder and just kind of take a picture, yeah, while they're not looking.
But no, it's, and there's been people that I've walked past, or that I've stayed in the same hotel as whether they be actors or just well-known people, and I've wanted to go up and say hello, but I sort of know sometimes what I feel like when people do that, so I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to leave them alone and let them do their thing, and it's cool that I saw them, and that's it. Yeah,
I mean, a lot of people out there would want to trade places with you. Is there one person one person out there that you would potentially want to trade lives with?
Wow. No, I don't think so. So a couple of years ago, I went to, Coolmore Stud. So they breed like some of the best racehorses in the world, and their biggest stallion is a horse called Galileo. I wouldn't mind trading places with him for a week. so he has a pretty good life, I tell you. He's loving it. So that's the one guy, or one specimen that came to mind.
I can't believe that's where your mind went. You would trade for a
I was trying to think of who the human version of that would be.
DiCaprio, maybe? I don't know. But yeah, so it's like, obviously he covers, I don't know how many, what are female horses a day, but like, I think it's like literally people will pay $500,000 a go to get, you know, to have a racehorse by Galileo. It's unbelievable. I mean, the money that they make out of this. Obviously, Galileo doesn't make any money.
Right.
But yeah, the Magner family that own Coolmore Stud, I mean, it's unbelievable that just the amount of unbelievable racehorses and stallions and stuff that go through there. It's nuts.
Wow, man.
So
I'm not get thrown off by some of these answers. And I think the next question can't possibly live up. And it's, what are you watching on Netflix right now? Or what's your show, your go-to show right now?
So we are like Shark Tank. We are like all in on Shark Tank. We're going through the seasons, and I actually think one of the guys, I would love to meet Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank. I don't know if he's a big golfer or whatever, but if you're listening, Kevin,
sure, you can make it happen.
Yeah, let's have dinner. But yeah, I just love the show. I think it's really cool. Really gotten into it the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. If golf wasn't a consideration, where's somewhere you would want to live? Would it be the same, the stall of that stallion that you were talking about?
Probably London. I love London. London's a great city. Or New York City. I'm a big fan of both of those places. Love the energy. But the thing I like about London is you can be on a really busy street like Oxford Street or Regent Street, but you go a couple of streets over and you're like in this really nice little leafy neighborhood, and it's sort of quiet. And, you know, I think potentially one day depending. It's hard, you know, my schedule is so much US based that it doesn't make sense to live over there full time, but right. I do like it there.
Not to transition back to golf, but missed this one earlier. So let's say you're 17 years old again, and someone says, by age 28, you have X amount of majors. What answer do you think satisfies 17-year-old Rory?
Two, maybe. I don't know. One, two. I never thought past the first one at that point. I always wanted to be able to call myself a major champion. And I always remember that winning the US Open and I was going to say going to bed that night. I didn't go to bed that night. So like the next day, just going to sleep and being like, saying it to myself over and over, you're a major champion. You're a major champion. That is like that to me was the ultimate. So 17-year-old Rory's pretty proud of himself to be sitting here having four.
What's a tournament that you look forward to every year that maybe flies under the radar, and for what reasons? Is it something, a tournament you look forward to?
One that flies under the radar Bay Hill.
Yeah.
I don't know if that flies under the radar. I mean, obviously with Arnie and stuff, people don't love the golf course. I actually quite enjoy it. I enjoy the week. We stay in Universal. It's a cool week. You sort of get away from the golf course and you're in the park, and it's cool. I mean, I've always, it's nice that it's only a 2.5-hour drive from West Palm. So we get up there and you can bring the car and it's sort of easy. So that, I don't know if that's underrated in any way, but that's one that I've always enjoyed.
It's interesting because you've had that wasn't always the case.
No,
right?
It wasn't. No, it was a tournament that I had skipped the last few years, and I made a conscious effort to go because I knew Arnold wasn't in great health, and I wanted to play before he passed away. And you know, one of the best memories of my life so far is having dinner with him in 2015, and just. It's just unbelievable, the stories, and he was just so cool and so gracious, and just, you know, you everything that you expected him to be, he was, you know, and that's just so awesome.
I mean, you never meet anyone that has like a bad thing to say about the way he treated people.
No, he was such a people person. He looked everyone in the eye, treated everyone the same. Erica and him actually share a birthday, September 10th. So it was so funny. I introduced Erica to him. And I said, Mr. Palmer, Erica and you share the same birthday. And he didn't quite hear me correctly. He went, oh, happy birthday. I said, no, you share the same birthday, September 10th. He said, oh, we should have a party. You know, and like, just Erica fell in love with him just for that. And that's, I think that's just the way he is with the way he was with everyone.
Do you remember the first time you met him and what that was all about?
The first time I met him was the 13th at Augusta. He was in his little cart. He was wearing gray pants, pink shirt. It was my first time playing the Masters. It was a practice round, 09. Hit my drive up to the corner at 13, and he was just under the trees there in his golf cart, and came out and shook my hand. These big hands, said, I'm Arnold Palmer.
And I said, really?
Yeah, no shit. But yeah, that was I'll always remember the first time. And so I met Arnie that year for the first time. Also met Jack that year for the first time, but in very different circumstances. I met Jack in the parking lot of the Gardens Mall in Palm Beach Gardens. It was the Sunday of the match, but I'd just been put out on the Saturday and then flew to West Palm on the Sunday to play the Honda the next week. And I'm getting out with my dad to go to, I don't know, wherever it was, Nordstrom or wherever, to go pick something up. And Jack gets out of his like gold Lexus, is walking in. I was like, oh. And I remember he said to me, oh, you played at Dove Mountain this weekend. He designed it. And he said, what did you think of it? I said, Jack, it was great for match play. Tried to be cordial as I could. Yeah, exactly.
If you were, let's flip this on you and say, like you're hosting. Like I remember you saying on Bacon's podcast, right? He asked if you didn't, if you weren't a professional golfer, what would you want to do? And you said you wanted to do something in professional golf, kind of.
Yeah, or professional sports or something. Yeah, I've always been a big sports fan. So
let's say you like you had your own podcast or radio show or something. How would you do it? What would you want to focus on? What would you talk about? Like, what kind of style would that be?
Yeah, so I think
don't get any ideas.
Yeah, my style would be is to try and get to know the players outside of the sport. So, you know, what else do you like? What else do you enjoy? What are your thoughts? What do you think? You know, I don't want to get too political, but what do you think of the political landscape? What do you think of the way the world is right now? What how, you know, what would you do to change it? What would you, you know, just sort of go a little bit deeper into to who they are as people? Because I think, you know, I think from even just this podcast, you can sort of try to, you know, you hopefully people can take from it that, you know, try to be the best person you can. Also, you know, the best golfer, but, you know, the best person, I think, delving into not getting too deep and too personal into their lives, but just knowing their thoughts and what they'd like to do, you know, maybe after their careers or what their interests are and just stuff like that. Because I think everyone has a great story and it doesn't have to be all about their profession. So I think that would probably be my style.
I think you're such a good example of, you know, somebody who can say what's on their mind without massive repercussions. You know, certainly there are repercussions sometimes.
Yeah,
you know, you get some blowback, but, you know, it's never the biggest deal in the world. And I wish more people would kind of be guests on your podcast because I feel like that would be the hard thing is pulling people who are willing to have those conversations because they're not always because I think they feel like there's a lot to lose. And I'm just curious if you've ever had kind of a conscious moment where it's like, you know, I'm going to say what I want to say and let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, I'm never going to apologize for being myself. You know, I am who I am. And if some people don't like it, that's totally fine. And, you know, I'm not trying to be everyone's friend, but I like to, you know, sounds cheap, I like to keep it real. I like to be myself and say what I think, and I have sort of opinionated, and I stand firm in my beliefs, and, you know, I just want to be honest and truthful and myself. And if people don't like that, then, you know, I it's not my problem. I can't do anything about that. But I just hope people appreciate that, I guess.
I feel like it's kind of something you just kind of need to power through and break through and be like, this is how I'm going to be, instead of always being on defense, you know?
And I think for the first few years of my career, I was, because it's all new and you want people to like you. It's a very instinctive human reaction. You know, you want people to appreciate you and like you, and you get to the point where you realize that not everyone is, because if everyone was the same, then, you know, life would be pretty boring, I guess. So I've definitely become more comfortable in my own skin. You know, I think everyone goes through that awkward stage of, like, between, you know, some people go through it a little earlier than others. I went through that awkward stage sort of in my early 20s, and I feel like I've got through that, and now I'm very comfortable in my own skin, and I say what I think, and as you said, sometimes it gets me into trouble, but I think people appreciate the honesty, and I wouldn't change that.
Do you have, what are some of the biggest regrets of things you've said in the media? Or things you've been too outspoken about, or just worked on differently?
Yeah, there's been a couple of things. Like the Olympic thing was a big, you know, the way it came off wasn't the way I wanted it to come off. You know, I'm all for making this game more inclusive and growing it and expanding its global reach. Nothing against that at all. I in my belief, I don't think that the Olympic Games is just the only way to do that. There's way more things that we can do to expand golf. The Olympics is one of those things, which is great. But there's other ways to do it also. So the whole Olympic thing, I was a bit of a ticking time bomb.
Yeah.
And it was just one question too many, and I sort of flipped. So I regret that a little bit. I didn't mean that to come off the way it did, because I'm all for making this game as big and as good as it can be. Anything else? Not really. I mean, obviously the reason I got off social media was because of that whole Elkington thing. And I don't regret it because I feel good about sticking up for myself. I might have stuck up for myself in a different way. You know, I didn't need to be as
you're kind of punching down.
Yeah, exactly. As condescending or as, you know, and that I realized that and I was like, you know what? And I was on my flight back to Palm Beach. I'd had 3 or 4 glasses of red wine. I was like, right, I'm going to get back at him here. Twitter and alcohol never go well together. Never, ever. So I was like, you know what? I just don't need this. I don't need to read it. I don't need to respond to it. I should have risen above it. I didn't. And that's why currently I am not on Twitter.
Yeah, we didn't talk about that. I mean, that's the worst thing that came of it.
It's so negative, though. I just think
you don't have to read your replies.
No, but it's just like, I love Instagram because it's all so light and airy and happy and everyone's posting pictures.
That's
and
not
like
reality, though.
But it's so nice. I should be more disciplined because I don't need to read what people are saying and the criticism and stuff. But sometimes it's hard to get away from it. So I just felt for the time being, you know what? I just don't need it in my life. I'm sure I'll go back on at some point. And, you know, I still keep like a track of what's going on in terms of what people are putting out there. I just don't, you know, I don't have control of my own account. So I don't, you know, read anything that is said to me or is put to me. So, but you know, I'm sure I'll get back on at some point. But it's a great tool. It is a great tool. It's great to engage with people. Let your sort of fans or followers see what you're up to and stuff like that. So there will be a point where I will take control of it again.
Have you ever started a burner account where you just fire back at people anonymously?
No, I haven't actually. The only thing I have started, but I haven't actually posted anything is like a personal Instagram account, so like just my friends and family can follow and stuff like that, but I haven't posted anything yet. But that's sort of it.
Private, yeah. You make it private
again. Make it private so that just my friends and family can sort of see it, and it's a bit more, I feel like you can show a bit more then. It's not, you don't have to worry about getting in trouble or
it's not for sponsors.
Yeah,
it's not,
exactly. Yeah. You know, where, you know, it's very valuable. I have across all platforms, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, you know, social media accounts in China and stuff, you know, close to 10 million followers with all those combined. So it's great for sponsors and it's great for stuff like that. So, and it's a huge tool and it's, you know, again, it is a business at the end of the day and it's a huge tool for that. But, yeah, it's, you know, you can't forget about your fans and your followers and your supporters, and I get that. So, you know, keep tuned. I'll get back on there one day, that blue little bird.
Because that's what sucks is you were good at it, I felt.
Yeah, no, I like it. I like engaging with people. I used to do some good Q&As and stuff, and I like that. You know, that's the good part of it. There's some bad parts of it as well. And it's even like, it's not even stuff about me. You know, you go on there and it's, he tweeted this, then he tweeted back. And it's like, oh, it's just so, just.
You know, you can control who you
follow. No, I know. But it feels, you know, if you don't follow some of these people, you feel like you're missing out on news or on whatever, you know. So, but look, one day.
Yeah.
One day I'll be back.
So we've peppered you with a million questions. Flip it on you. What questions, what have we missed? What are we missing in golf? What's not getting talked about? What questions would you ask us or anyone? It's hard. See, it's harder being a podcast host than you think.
Are you excited about the President's Cup?
Not as much as that. No, not really. I'm excited to see the U.S. team. I invest in the President's Cup to see some of these players perform in this situation, but it's been so uncompetitive for so long that it's hard to get jacked about the event. And there's not a natural rivalry. It's like international. It's everybody, but
it takes time as well, though, doesn't it? Like it takes time. The President's Cup is a new,
right?
You know, it's a new thing. It's only been going since the 90s.
But the internationals don't have a bond like Team Europe does, and
it's just hard
to compare it. I mean, if it's up to me. I've said this for a long time, play the Ryder Cup every damn year. And the only reason we don't play it every year is because that's how it's been in the past.
That's biannually. But do you think it would diminish the special?
I don't.
No?
Say that, like, do you think the Masters should go to every other year?
No.
Does it diminish the special nature of the Masters to have it every year?
Yeah.
Imagine like...
But I guess the thing for me is, and this is where I say to some of the American guys, like, it's sort of like to play a team event every year. It's like, ooh, it's a long week, and it's a lot of mental energy and stuff. And
well, when you're screaming your head off like you were, I mean, that's you're gonna lose a lot of energy
on matches,
just steaming from the top of your head.
Yes, I guess.
So my thing too is like, grow the game. I don't get into that. Grow
but
the game.
But you know,
stuff.
I like the President's Cup. It doesn't. Yeah, look, maybe some Indian kid sees Anirban Lahiri on the president, and he wants to. That's his idol, and he wants to emulate him. And that, if that, that's yeah, that is growing the game. But it's growing the game at such a small,
right.
Like, there must be bigger ways to do this. I guess that's
my point
thing.
Is. And the it goes for the United States. It's in the U.S. You know, they play the event every 2 years, so obviously it's in the U.S. every 4 years.
Yeah,
and you got to wait 4 years in between this 3-day event that's in your country to get like really excited about it. And it's like if it was every other year in the U.S., there's a home away, and it's every year the memories just stay a little closer. Because sometimes you look back at like the 2014 teams, and you know. Not to diminish Hunter Mahan, but he's playing in the Webb Finals right now, and he was on the Ryder Cup team, and that was only two Ryder Cups ago.
Well, you
I
look
think.
At someone like, I mean, and this again, this isn't to diminish, but Jimmy Donaldson hit the winning shot at the Ryder Cup,
right?
And he's you know he's sort of struggled with his game a little bit since or whatever. So it is the dynamic of the teams can change so much in 2 years. You're right about that, but. I just
see your head turning. You're on board.
You're convincing me here. But even though I'm not a part of the President's Cup or whatever, but even though I usually have that week off, I always tune in. I always watch. Yeah. You know, it's always something that, and that's just me as a golf fan. I like to see. I remember watching the one at Harding Park. I don't know why that was. I think
Tiger Twirl.
Yeah. There's been a few of those. But I think maybe, was Hideki on that team?
I don't think he would have been. No, that was 2009. No, he would have been.
I think Adam Scott was on
that
team.
Adam was on with, was he maybe playing with Ishikawa?
Could be.
That might have been it. So maybe like I tuned in because I just thought, okay, that's pretty cool and whatever. So hopefully it's more competitive this year. I mean, it was competitive in Korea a couple of years ago, so... Be good to see if it was a. It was
U.S.
A
are like
finish.
-300 favorites. Like it's pretty. They're going to be pretty big favorites. Yeah. I mean, this is kind of one of the better teams we've had in a long time. I mean,
so
that's
Europe
why you don't
or,
want to
or,
play it every year. Well, you're afraid of this current U.S. team.
Europe, or, I know. Look, Europe are up against it next year in France. I mean, the and it's not just next year. It's like for the next 10 years, like, because the guys on this team are so young. And good. I mean, and you know, you've got like obviously Jordan, JT, Brooks, Daniel Berger, Patrick Reed. Who am I missing? Ricky Fowler. I mean, it's everyone's in their 20s. You know, it's a really, really strong team for the foreseeable future. Yeah.
Yeah. You've had some guys emerge too on your side though. Rahm is going to be.
Yeah.
Rahm's
a stud. Thomas Peters. My partner, Matt Fitzpatrick's playing well again. Good win for him. Yeah.
So you're still claiming Thomas. You're not letting him go for next year.
No, he's my partner. If he wants to be. If he has someone else in
mind. I think
mind,
he'll be
then,
okay with that.
Yeah.
All right, so we're going to play the Ryder Cup every year. We got that. What other topics are burning on your mind?
The question I had, what do you think is the biggest story in golf right now? Because I was thinking about that, and I don't really know what the answer is.
We could not answer this, by the way.
I think it's this. It's the, and I think it has been the story for the last few years. It's this younger generation coming through that, you know, winning majors earlier. I mean, when has there really been a time before where you have? I'm sort of excluding myself from this a little bit, but you know, JT, who's 23 or 24, just won his first. Jordan's got three at 24. You know, Brooks is 27, 28, whatever. He just got his. I mean, there's a lot of 20-somethings now and younger guys winning the biggest tournaments in the world. Siwoo Kim won the Players at 21. You know, you go back, you know, even guys like that. Yeah. You know, Hideki, what he's doing at a young age.
Rahm's 22.
Like a lot of young, like I can't remember really an era that that has had a lot of these young guys all at the same time excelling and doing so well. I think that could be the biggest story.
I mean, do you feel like the tour has changed since you got on it? As far, I mean, average age of winners is plummeting. Average age of the tour is plummeting. Has the overall vibe on tour kind of changed as a result of that? I think so.
Guys are younger. You know, the tour has embraced the modern age in terms of social media and connecting to fans in a different way, and it's definitely changed so much. Even from when I started on tour in 2009, it's changed a lot. It's it just doesn't seem to be. I mean, it's funny. Like I'm looking at someone like a Phil or a Henrik Stenson or Ian Poulter. Those guys are in their 40s, and they're sort of not on the
careful
whatever back nine of their career.
You've done it. Don't do that again.
But those are guys that are in their 40s that are they're not that far away from playing Champions Tour golf, and it's just when you've grown up with them, it's like, wow, those guys are it's amazing that time goes so quickly. I mean, I've been on tour 10 years. It's wild. Nuts. It is absolutely nuts. It goes so quickly. So I think just the young generation coming through, winning the biggest events, not being afraid. I think that's the big story right now, and I think games the game is in a great place because of it. And it's not just you've got storylines from everywhere. It's this young Spanish kid, it's this young Japanese kid. It's obviously you're always going to have the strength in America because of just the numbers that play here and the system, and it's always going to be great. But it's such a global game now. Even PGA Tour expanding, going to Asia, going to these places, it's World Tour. Yeah. It's happening one day, I think.
You walked right into that one. What do you think of the possibilities of that? How would that look? Are you in support of it?
I think it has to happen.
Yeah.
As time goes on, just to have all these tours competing against each other and having to change dates and this and that, it's counterproductive.
Yeah.
I think everyone has to sort of come together and say, right, this is what we need to do. And I don't know what the solution is. I mean, I struggle to picture it. The easy thing would be for the PGA Tour to go and buy the European Tour and say, look, we'll take it from there. You still run the European events, and we have a model that is, we have 12 events a year, excluding the majors, 12 events a year that are the biggest events, like say tennis, the ATP 1000s, they call them. And then you've got the 500 series events, and you've got the 250s, and sort of rank them like that. Because there's, in any given week, whether it's a golf circuit or a tennis circuit, there's three or four tournaments going on at the same time, whether it's web.com or whatever, so it's, I just don't see any other way.
Right. I think it'd be so cool to see a ton of Americans come over and play the Irish Open, play the Scottish Open.
I'd love that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, of course you would.
But I just think that is the way it's gonna happen. Yeah. I just don't see any other way. And I wouldn't take the stance of what Greg Norman was trying to do all those years ago and trying to start it himself or whatever. Right. I'm just a pawn in the whole, the whole game. I'm a player, and I'll play anywhere because I want to play golf and win golf tournaments. But, I know there's been discussions that have taken place, but I mean, it'd be very early stages, but maybe one day.
The Irish Open has had this incredible resurgence in the last couple of years. A lot of it can be attributed to you. I got to see it this year for the first time and see now this is the first year as a Rolex event, see the feel that it drew, the crowd that it drew up at Port Stewart. What do you kind of envision for that tournament going forward, and how much influence and effect do you have on everything that goes on with that event?
Yeah, no, not so now that the Irish Open's got a date that is really, it's in July now, kids are off school, really make it like the event of the summer in Ireland, almost like a festival, like a music festival, or not obviously quite like that, but try and spread it around the country, bring it to great golf courses, Lynx golf courses. It's in the summer, doesn't say much for Ireland because it could be any sort of weather, as we saw this year, but it's a better date. It's close enough to the Open Championship so that guys can come over and play and acclimatize and get used to that style of golf. So hopefully that's, I mean, the European Tour have been great. You know, as much as I'm talking about a world tour here, the European Tour have been instrumental in supporting us and getting it to that level, and having it a part of the Rolex series and all of that stuff as well. So, but it's a, geez, I didn't know half of what went into running a golf tournament. Then I got involved in one, and it's amazing. I mean, it takes a lot of people and a lot of hard work to put on these events.
It's like a full-time job it for is, people to is, run one event a year.
It is. It really is. It you know, from army. From the corporate hospitality side to the, you know, the golf course side to the, I mean, there's just so much that goes into it logistically. And so no props to all those people that put on these great events for us.
I feel, and we haven't covered, I should have probably asked this earlier when you've kind of discussed it and had a lot of questions about it. You're a few weeks in, you having your buddy Harry Diamond on the bag. Yeah. There was a lot of questions just about your separation from JP. So since in the months that, you know, you guys have been separated since then, you guys talk a lot still a good relationship there. And I think I just kind of wanted to hear, when you explain it to me, everything made total sense.
Yeah, no, for sure. So like it was something that, I don't know, if I had have done it after Augusta this year, JP would have understood just because of, you know, where we were at and whatever. And I just think the timing of it took JP a little bit by surprise, but it was something that had been in my head for a little while, and more just to do with I wasn't myself on the golf course, and I was getting really hard on him, and it just wasn't the only time I really, you know, it was affecting our relationship. The only time I would talk to him would be to text him to say I'll meet you at this time at the putting green or on the golf course, and that was really it. It was, you know, the friendship side of our relationship had sort of was just becoming so stale and so non-existent. I was like, this isn't really right. And I, so it was a part of that, but I feel like, you know, relationships, especially ones of that nature, they run their course, and just sometimes you just need to freshen it up. And I think JP understood that. And obviously it's a, you know, it's tough for everyone involved. It's just, it's not a nice thing to go through, but at the end of the day, it was something I felt like I needed to do to just sort of, you know, get a fresh perspective on things, I guess. So I'm heading to Dubai in October and November, and I'll see, JP lives out there. I'll see a lot of him then, and I'm sure we'll go out to dinner and we'll, you know, we'll play a bit of golf together and whatever. So you know, hopefully that side of our relationship will start to build again, and that'll be nice. But Harry's been great. Like, Harry was the best man at my wedding. He's a, you know, he was my best friend growing up, and it's been great to have him on the bag. But you know, I'm going to have to, you know, and I am looking, and I've been talking to a few people, but in the off season, that's one of the big things that I need to, I need to do, is to find myself a permanent caddy going forward. So it's been great. It's been really fun to have Harry on the bag these last few weeks, but you know, I've realized that, you know, caddies do have a, you know, there is a value to put on them, especially a really good one. And even though you have your great buddy on the bag beside you, it's great, and it helps in terms of just keeping you level-headed and keeping you in a good frame of mind. But guys that have been out here for a long time, they know what they're doing, and they can, you know, even if that just saves you a shot at tournament, that can be the difference, I guess.
So if you're putting out kind of a want ad for a new caddy, what's important to you?
I think chemistry has to be important. I think that is a very important part of a player caddy relationship, is being able to stand each other for 6 or 7 hours a day. You know, you're spending that much time together. But then professionalism, you know, doing whatever they can to help you. You know, and I wouldn't say going above and beyond, but you know, just doing the right things, going and walking the golf course in the mornings, seeing where the pins are, you know, there's just a lot of stuff that goes into it that it just isn't seen. And but yeah, I think the most important thing is if the player is doing all he can to be the best that he can be, then hopefully the caddy is doing all they can to be the best that they can be. And I guess that's where I would want it. Yeah.
There's a certain part of it that's just kind of unexplainable, in that, you know, when you call in a caddy to read a putt, do you trust that answer? You know what I mean? It's kind of, you know, it's not the same.
I think it's hard because I think the first thing, if you call a caddy in to read a putt, the first thing he should say to you is, okay, what speed are you hitting this putt at?
Right.
Because it's all about speed at the end of the day. You know, he could say to you, I think it's a ball right, but if it's not a ball right, if you're just trying to die it in the front of the hole, and it's not a ball right, if you're trying to, you know, hit the back and don't care if it goes 4 feet by. So first thing is, okay, what speed do you want this, you know, do you want this to go in at? And then you can start to have a read from there. So, and good caddies, good players know that. And that's probably the first question that they should ask. But I rarely call a caddy in because even if I make a wrong decision, I don't want to blame anyone. I don't want to have that on anyone else apart from me. So that's my thing.
All right, 2 hours. I hope I didn't abuse your
2 hours. Wow.
I asked
time
how much
flies when you're having fun.
you said you were open ended. That was your first mistake you made. Okay. So,
well, maybe
I'm sure your wife's wondering where you are right now. So, I hope we covered everything, Rory. Dude, thank you for the time, man. Thanks for everything, your support of us, man. This has been
my pleasure. It's good to get back on here.
When are we gonna do part four?
I'm free this, you know, October, November, December. I'm sure if you want me on like 4 times in 1 year. But no, I'm happy to do this. I love just sitting and chatting and sort of talking golf, not golf, whatever. I've always enjoy it.
Much appreciated, man. Best of luck with the rest of the week. Hopefully on to Atlanta by the time this comes out.
Hopefully.
And if not, best of luck wrapping up the season in Europe, and we'll speak soon.
Perfect. Thank you.
Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most. How about him? That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect